Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist ho who lives in New York City, whose nervous eye twitch is gone, and whose pronouns are she and her.
And Akua, pronouns she and her, who is a black, apparent, demisexual, surprisingly free woman today.
Oh my God, I love it. I love it. Every episode of the Inner Ho Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-host talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. This episode, we are talking about the non-monogamous homies, the fight for LGBTQ Philly foster parents' rights, a discussion on adopting and fostering three-parent families, very, very queer families, single parents, see a trend here, and much, much more.
And if you would like to follow along with the conversation had on this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoUprising so we can see it, and the hashtag Podin so other people can see it. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at InnerHoUprising without the G on Twitter, at InnerHoUprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. Join our Facebook group by searching Inner Ho Uprising Community, that is CUMMUNITY, and head to innerhouprising.com to pay a ho.
If you want to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, or if you'd like us to host a consent, pleasure, or dating virtual workshop for your organization, we would love to. To book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Our first segment of the day is Ho of the Week. That is where we shout out the homies who have supported Inner Ho Uprising in the past week. Hoes of the Week get special nicknames, and the game they choose to participate is to guess the meaning behind their nicknames. This week we got GQ Persephone, whose nickname is Persephone, who became a patron on Patreon, and we got Anna T, aka Matilda, who upped their pledge on Patreon. If you would like to be a Ho of the Week and get a cool nickname of your very own, there's some things you can do to do that. They are as follows. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or on Stitcher. You can feature us in an article you've written or give us a shout out on social media. These are some non-monetary ways that you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support, and we understand that in these uncertain times, monetary support is not feasible for many folks, so please do not spend your last dollars on us. If you can spare some change, though, you can donate to us on PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho, or you can become a patron by going to patreon.com/innerhouprising. The links to both are in the show notes. Also, a reminder that if you do become a patron on Patreon, for $2 a month, you can participate in things like our Slack chats and patron-only film nights. For $5 a month, you can join our Monday night Zoom hangouts. And at any patron tier, you receive access to our episodes a few days early, entries to our workshops and parties, and entries to our pre-episode recording hangouts. We just did one. We congratulated a very beautiful engagement. We saw bae, we saw engagement hair. We talked about why dating apps are still hard, but how to make them a little bit less hard. That is the type of stuff that you're missing out on when you're not a patron of the Inner Ho Uprising podcast. Okay, now we are getting into our second segment of the day, and that segment is Bae of the Week. That is where we shout out people who we find cool, attractive, groundbreaking, amazing, all that kind of stuff. And this week, we have to shout out none other than the whole team behind Poly Dallas Millennium, as well as the Poly Dallas Millennium community. Poly Dallas Millennium is a conference dedicated to polyamory and ethical non-monogamy, hosted and invented by one of the baddest bitches I've ever had the pleasure to meet, Ruby Bowie Johnson, okay? So we love Poly Dallas Millennium. If you ever listen to this podcast, you might know that. Me and Akua attended in person in the past, back in 2018. Better times, y'all. Better times. And this year, we had the honor of doing a virtual podcast for the folks at this year's virtual conference. And it was good.
It was
a great time.
Yeah.
Akua looked like a rich bitch with a do-rag. I looked like a cyberpunk babe. And we talked about the things. We talked about the things on how to have a healthy and fulfilling either solo sex life, partnered sex life, committed relationship sex life, dating sex life, all those kinds of things. It was a really good chat. We want to shout out Ruby for creating the space and doing the work for all of these years and being amazing. She's a previous guest of the show. If you haven't, please listen to our episode, The Open Relationship Coach. That is our episode with her. That'll be in the show notes. Also, shout out to folks we met that evening. Shout out to Sarah, Intimacy Pages, and Jen. Shout out to Cherry for organizing us behind the scenes. Shout out to Nay, aka Honestly Nay. She did a After Dark presentation, and it was her doing a Savage remix, and she is like so cute and dope, so that was very fun. Yeah, that was very fun to watch. Shout out to Diana and Keelan for hosting the After Dark portion of that day of Poly Dallas Millennium and their pool parties that they do in person when Poly Dallas is in person. I need to get me back to one of those.
I need to get back there.
Do you remember when we went to the pool party in 2018 and our flight was in 5 hours and we were like, I think we should just stay here.
We should just live like, here. Me and Sam started plotting on how we could relocate to Dallas. How, if we miss this flight, how feasible is it for us to just transplant ourselves? Because we didn't want to go.
The only thing we needed to do was find jobs. Very possible. I can do anything from anywhere. And you have a highly, you have a highly demandable skill. All we needed to do was get your son down there. Cool. That's all we needed to do.
And our cars, like, and that's it.
I didn't have a car at that time, so I was I was freeze a bird. Oh, 2021, we are coming for you. Or 2022, depending on how the pandemic works out. Shout out to Evita, who did a talk on colorism. That was yesterday. I'm very sad that I missed out on it. But we love Evita. Listen to our episode with her. Triads, unicorns, and poly parenting. I'm going to throw in Rosalyn. I don't think that she did a presentation there, but I'm assuming that she was at least in attendance. And we love her. So check out our episode with Rosalyn, solo polyamory. Shout out to everyone else who we didn't mention. And I can't wait for a hopefully safe and in-person Poly Dallas Millennium in the future. So speaking of non-monogamy and polyamory, we have a whole episode chock full of thoughts and information about non-traditional family structures. But first, is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals? The anxiety of last week for me personally was wild. I mentioned earlier that I developed a stress-related eye twitch. There's been a lot going on in the world, and sometimes I just need help processing it, to be honest. And I get that assistance via my fave teletherapy service, BetterHelp. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. There's a broad range of expertise available, which might not be locally available in many areas. The service is available for clients worldwide. So you can log in to your account at any time and send a message to your counselor. You get timely and thoughtful responses, plus you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room as with traditional therapy. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today, as do we here at the Inner Hoe Uprising. You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. That's a lot of testimonials. People got good stuff to say every day about BetterHelp. You can also visit betterhelp.com/IHU. That is Better H-E-L-P. And join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are actually recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. The service is just that good. We have a very special offer for Inner Hoe Uprising listeners. That is you right now at this very moment. You can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/IHU. Once again, you can get 10% off your first month by going to betterhelp.com/IHU. That's betterhelp.com/IHU. And now, let's get into the main event, or one of the main events. I shine bright, in all my different colors, We are getting into a segment that we like to call Fuck That. This is our current events segment. And today we are talking about the fact that the Supreme Court of the United States, or SCOTUS, has heard a case about faith, LGBTQ rights, and foster care in Philly. So what the heck is this and why is it important? So I'm sure you've heard a lot and been inundated a lot in regards to executive politics this week and legislative politics this week. Hashtag Inner Joe Uprising and hashtag Kamala Harris. I had no other way to insert that into this episode, so I made it. I'm so sorry for the puns, but I have to do it. But
we love the puns. Thank you, Akua. We stand for the puns.
Oh, man. Ho Biden. President-elect Ho Biden. So silly. But let's get into some judicial politics and some not so silly things. So on November 4th, day after Election Day, the case Fulton versus the city of Philadelphia was heard by the Supreme Court of the United States. It's a pretty important case because it will determine whether private agencies getting taxpayer money can use their religious beliefs as grounds to refuse LGBTQ communities in spaces like homeless shelters or foster care. So here's a little bit of backstory behind this, right? So Philly is in custody of 5,000 kids who have been abused or neglected and are no longer in the home of their parents. The city, and that's the case with many cities, but this story regards something that happened in Philadelphia. So the city contracts with private agencies to house and eventually place those kids into foster care. Right now in Philly, about 30 agencies do this work. And one of those agencies is Catholic Social Services, which I will refer to as CSS going forward. In 2018, it was reported, I believe, in the Philadelphia Inquirer that CSS did not place children in the homes of same-sex couples. Boom, boom, boom. Their reasoning is that the church, obviously, the Catholic Church does not endorse same-sex coupling. Some additional information here is that according to CSS, if same-sex couples do come to them, their policy is to refer them to one of the 28 other orgs, because at the time, another organization was actually doing that same thing. But I don't want to get too into the weeds to that. So 28 other orgs. To date, there has been no known case of a same-sex couple actually going to CSS and being denied. So this case that we're talking about is very ideological. Like, no one is actually fighting anyone for the right to do something right now, this very moment. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So Philly froze referrals to CSS's foster service and eliminated funding to that wing of the organization. They still provide funding to other wings of the organization. So CSS, for example, still houses foster kids in, not foster kids, but I guess kids in group homes before they get placed. And they don't deny kids who are LGBTQ. It's just the denial of same-sex couples as foster parents. Yeah, so Philly froze referrals to CSS's wing and then also to another organization in the city, which is what I was talking about a little bit earlier. That organization, I think it was called Bethany or something like that. They changed their policies, but CSS stuck to their guns and along with two foster parents who use CSS just sued Philadelphia, which is just kind of, it's just like the audacity of it all. But yeah, they sued Philadelphia on grounds of them, their freedom of speech and their freedom to practice religion being violated. Mm-hmm. So how did we get to the Supreme Court? So two lower courts ruled in favor of Philly, and CSS appealed all the way up to the highest court in the land. Legal stuff, etc. Not going to get too much into how that works. So how did the Supreme Court hearing go on November 4th? According to NPR, because I did not see the proceedings, so I'm going off of what this reporter said, Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Brett Kavanaugh, and Neil Gorsuch, four conservative justices on the court, seem to stress the positive work that CSS is doing in Philadelphia, with Kavanaugh even saying that it seems like Philly is just looking for a fight because no same-sex couples actually went to CSS and requested fostering. Newly appointed Justice Amy Coney Barrett kept the questions neutral. Chief Justice John Roberts asked tough questions to both CSS and Philly, and the court's three liberal judges, Sonia Sotomayor, who is Catholic herself, along with, I believe, four other justices on the court, along with Elena Kagan and Breyer, who are both Jewish, seemed to stress the additional discriminatory implications that CSS's policy could have, i.e., what's to stop them from denouncing couples examples of a different faith outside of Christianity, for example. Mm-hmm. So what does it mean now that this case is being heard by the Supreme Court? Well, the Supreme Court is set to make a decision on the case later in the court term. I have no idea when that is. And if the court rules in favor of CSS, I think that that has major implications on how on LGBTQ folks accessing private services that are taxpayer funded, particularly when it comes to religious institutions. So yeah, you might have missed this in the all of the electoral politics that we've been talking about, but definitely follow this story. And just to give a bit of background as to why it's particularly important to look at the foster care system as it pertains to LGBTQ youth and LGBTQ non-affirming homes. So 30% of the foster care population in the U.S. is actually LGBTQ. One study found that 78% of LGBTQ foster youth had been removed from a foster home or run away because of hostility from their foster families. This maltreatment is hypothesized to be partially responsible for the fact that LGBTQ youth make up as many as 40% of homeless teens, even though that they only make up 10% of the general population of all teens in the United States. Homelessness, in turn, increases youth's risk of substance abuse, risky sexual behavior, victimization, and contact with the criminal justice system. So it all ties in. The universe is all connected. Compared to other LGBTQ youth, those who are highly rejected by their families because of their sexual orientation or gender identity are more than 3 times as likely to use illegal drugs or be at high risk for contracting HIV or other STIs, nearly 6 times as likely to experience high levels of depression, and more than 8 times as likely to attempt suicide. And one last thing to leave you off with before we get into our personal thoughts when it comes to fostering, I will leave you with a nice little resource I found for foster parents looking for tools on how to support LGBTQ youth. I'm not going to read it on the show, so that will be in the show notes for this episode. And before we move on, any thoughts about this, Akua?
Well, thank you, first off, for what's the word I'm looking for? I'm short of words. That's how amazed I am. But thank you for explaining this story and bringing it to our attention, because definitely did slide under the radar. Mm-hmm. It definitely is a story that I want to follow, because I definitely agree that it has larger implications about how LGBTQ families and people can access certain services that are government funded, are taxpayer funded. And, you know, as president, it can definitely have implications about discrimination, because we know the discriminatory practices of people mm-hmm. against LGBTQ folks. And definitely want to see how this new court and their appointed judges work together or come to decisions.
Yeah. One interesting thing about this that I don't know, I just thought it was interesting. Some judges, it's kind of funny how judges work. They're like really like mediators. Like, what about this? Like, just like a parent mm-hmm. trying to figure out 2 things between children. Some justices suggested that, or maybe it was just one justice, suggested that in like the contract with the city somewhere with CSS, it say, like, yes, we place children in the homes of LGBTQ parents, but just so you know, the Catholic Church does not endorse same-sex coupling or same-sex marriage, which that has mm-hmm. different implications about like religion and LGBTQ folks. But yeah, I think like, I feel like that's a happy middle ground, right? Mm-hmm. It has deeper implications, and I think some more things should be looked at when it comes to the church. But I think that that's a fair middle ground to start with. And just like the fact that CSS was like, nah, is interesting to me. You know, like, why is it nah?
I like the fact that there isn't, for this case, there isn't someone suing for the right to. It's a kind of like this preemptive step. It's like, we should not be waiting for someone to be discriminated against, mm-hmm. you know, traumatized, to then say, this needs to be heard. The city of Philadelphia is like, no, we see the problem. Mm-hmm. We are trying to stop it in its tracks. And I think more of that needs to happen.
Mm. Yeah, that's even more interesting, because Philadelphia was like, we're trying to stop it in its tracks by just defunding that department. But then CSS was like, nah, we want we're going to sue for our right to discriminate.
To discriminate against people. Like,
everybody's just thinking ahead in there.
Like, Philadelphia is like, I'm going to use logic and logistics to say that there are already laws on the books that says discrimination against these folks of people is illegal in this way, we're going to generalize it to this as well. And then CSS was like, no, 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 no. Because my right to practice my religion says I can discriminate against these niggas. There, don't take that away from me.
There could be a loophole. Like, let's go to the Supreme Court and find out.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go.
Yeah.
And the consistency, like, after those two lower courts was like, nah, Philly got the right idea. They were like, no. Mm.
Yeah, that's consistency and audacity.
Like, the order to keep going.
That's very funny. Mm. One last thing I did want to say about this story is that I think it's, or in trying to highlight it and highlight the story behind, or the context behind LGBTQ affirming homes and non-affirming homes, I'm not trying to imply that a non-LGBTQ person can be or is always going to be unaffirming to queer kids. But I think the chances are a lot more likely in an LGBTQ same-sex coupling home. And also, like, why not have that modeling out there? Like, why not have that role modeling out there? You know, like, there's a difference, not saying that all kids who are Black need to grow up in Black homes, but it's nice to have that role model and to be able to connect with an older person who can help you navigate the world because they navigated the world in those same ways, you know? Mm-hmm. Also, on the flip side, for straight kids who may have come from LGBTQ non-affirming homes, wouldn't it be great for them to grow up and have a role model who is queer, or two role models who are queer, and kind of like be sent back out into the world with a new perspective and be like LGBTQ affirming in their personal lives? Is the conversation in this episode so far resonating with you, helping you learn some new shit, helping you unlearn some old shit, or just allowing you to have a good ass time? Don't all speak at once, but I'm hearing that it is, and we love to hear that it is. We would also love for you to support the continuation of conversations like these. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, please take a moment to subscribe to us or drop 5 stars and leave a rating for the homies. That's us. We are the homies. If you got a little extra change, drop some cash in the PayPal by going to paypal.me/innerho, or come join our Patreon community and access things like our chat and virtual events for as low as $2 a month by going to patreon.com/innerhouseuprising, the links to which are in the show notes, or you can just hit up your friend and say, yo, listen to this podcast. We thank and love you all for your continued support. Okay, now we're going to get into our topic of the day, which is all about the host's thoughts on fostering and adoption. And Akua is going to lead the conversation. Take it away and tell us a little bit about why we're talking about this.
In discussing this and in preparing for the show and discussing this news article or this current event, I definitely thought it would be fun to do a little deep dive into our own thoughts about fostering and how, as LGBTQ affirming people and identifying folks, we could create a space for what is clearly a need in our nation, you know? So my first question is, why would you want to foster and or adopt? What is your experience with the foster care system and or adoption?
I've said this multiple times on the podcast, but my mom was both a foster kid and an adoptee. And her sister, my aunt, was also a foster kid and adoptee. And I had it was not a dearth of stories about their experience growing up like that, as well as my aunt just telling me about the various ways that I need to engage in the foster care system and make it better, whether it be making a documentary, or when I started to go into audio, making an audio series about it, or doing investigative journalism on the place that fostered her. So I just feel like I like literally need to carry on this torch and this mantle. So there's always been that, you know, I've always felt like part of, like, when people talk about legacy and continuing their family legacy, it's often like having biological children, but coming from a home of people who were adopted and who were raised in adopted homes, I feel like that is also a part of my legacy. And so it makes sense in order to carry on the tradition of these two women who have had a very foundational impact on my life. I would like to and need to adopt kids. Mm-hmm. And then also I just have these views on the world that are very apocalyptic and very, even as we turn the tide in this country a little bit and we come out of a very, like, what's been a dark 4 years, I still have concerns about what the trajectory of just, like, this planet is and whether or not it is, like, literally ethical for me to bring new life into what I think is, even though it's going to be a better world, still a very dark world. I still haven't made a decision on whether or not I want to have biological children, but I think regardless, I do want to mentor and raise and just be a very good parent to a human being at some point. And yeah, I think adopting has always been in there. So yeah. What about you?
Okay. So me, I feel, let's take it back. So I've always wanted to kind of be like a mentor to someone that was unrelated to me, or have a positive impact in someone's life. And I always kind of thought of doing like a big brother, big sister, thing. Mm-hmm. And as I now turn to parenting, I've thought more and more about fostering, because my own pregnancy and actually my own trial through parenting has been very traumatic for me. Mm-hmm. That coupled, you know, I have a lot of anxieties about bearing another biological child, mm-hmm. what that might mean in terms of their needs, what that might mean in terms of my body, what that might mean in terms of my mortality, you know, knowing that Black women have higher maternal rates. And that wasn't something that I knew at 17, you mm-hmm. know.
Higher but maternal mortality rates.
Yes. That wasn't something that I knew at 17. And when I think back to the way I was treated and cared for, or not care for, neglected after having my son, like the risk of me actually passing was high then too, you know, and thinking about how my doctors treated me, how they neglected some of my concerns. Mm-hmm. So a lot of, you know, when I put that all together, I'm like, I ain't having no more kids, especially given how old my son is. I'm like, I ain't starting from scratch again. I'm not doing this. I always joke and say, you know, he's 11 now. I got 8 more years. He's 18 and he's out. But I definitely know that once he's 18, years. I'm not, you know, but once once he's 18, I'm not done parenting. Yeah. And there's also a part of me that there's a very maternal part of me. Like, there's a very nurturing part of me.
Kua is one of my moms and has been for like 20 years.
And I know, so that part of me is always like, but why not another kid? So then, you know, for the fact that I want to have a positive impact on someone that's not biologically related to me, and I want to nurture and grow someone, fostering seems like a really good option for me. Like, mm-hmm. it's something that I definitely see if I expand my family, definitely seeing as an option, mm-hmm. Whether fostering or adopting. I would have to see how that process goes. Mm-hmm. The thing about fostering that scares me is that I get attached to people, and mm-hmm. there is the possibility of reunification of that child with their biological parents. And then mm-hmm. what do I do? You know, like, yay, you know, they have, quote unquote, have been rehabilitated or whatever. You guys have been reunified. I have a hard time saying bye to people. Like, where do we go? What do we do? But yeah, those are some of the reasons why I am thinking about fostering.
I have a question about the saying goodbye, because I don't actually know what the legal implications of this are. And I think it is just like a case by case basis on what that parent wants. But like, yes, they're not going to be living in your home anymore.
Yes.
But you can visit and send cards. I know that that's not the same for it's not yeah. the same kind of attachment. It's not like imagine like Dave just like up and leaves one day. It's not like he's going to send cards and whatever, but mm-hmm. I mean, there can still be like a level of familial intimacy there. And I'm sure they would definitely. Always like appreciate you for the rest of their lives.
Mm-hmm. And there will definitely, they could definitely still be a level of contact. Like we are in the age of social media and, you know, phones and stuff like yeah. this person just does not disappear into the abyss. Yeah. You know,
I wonder true, how true, what's true. Her name's doing.
You know, yeah. definitely.
Yeah. Another mm-hmm. point that I wanted to make, piggybacking off of your point, so when I was younger, I would say that I wanted to adopt because I didn't want to go through like the pain of childbirth, because in addition to stories about the foster care system, I also heard a lot from my aunts and maternal figures about how traumatic their birth giving experience is. Like I've said this on the show a couple of times, but like, the nurses who were there when my mom was giving birth told her not to push mm-hmm. and I came out oxygen deprived and just like various other like horror stories. And I thought as a child, before I knew that Black women's high maternal mortality rates were super high, I thought I was just being like a punk. Like mm-hmm. I thought I was just being like, this is what you got to go through as a woman. So just suck it up. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, there's always adoption. But now like I'm fully connecting as a 28-year-old, like, oh no, those were like valid concerns. Like they were telling me about trauma and I was mm-hmm. scared. I was rightfully trying to avoid that, which is mm-hmm. like that's like a very human thing to do. So yeah.
Yeah. whenever push, you tell y'all. That story,
they
I'm
said,
just
don't
like,
push. Yeah.
Like what? Every time you tell that story, it just thank God for your mom. Your mom was like, "Look, ma'am, this baby's coming."
So yeah, my body's saying to push, so I think I'm gonna
That's
actually
what we're about
push.
To do.
Oh boy, yeah.
You mentioned, you know, being 28. When do you feel you'd be ready? You know, what do you need to take the step to actually fostering, to starting
mm-hmm,
this?
Mm-hmm. I can't put an age next to it, although I have an age in my head, but I don't want to say it out loud so as to not jinx it. But I think that when I've reached a certain level of success and stability in this new career path, because this is a new career path for me, it's only been like 2 years at this point, professionally doing this kind of work, that I'd be ready and confident to start that path. I also think I would definitely need my own place and not an apartment, but a house if it's like a full child who's going to be living with me, you know? Mm-hmm. What about you?
I definitely agree. I do feel like I am in a good space in my career, definitely starting out. I'm sure there are a lot more advancements, but even if I stayed in this place where I am, I'm good career-wise. Mm-hmm. I would definitely need and want the space. You know how I feel about my space. So definitely would not want to live in an apartment or would want to be able to afford an apartment with multiple rooms, which just means not New York because...
Mm. That doesn't exist. Oh, yeah.
That doesn't exist. You know, that doesn't exist. But definitely would want to be able to provide an environment in which not only do I have my own space, but my foster child has their own
right,
space.
Right, exactly.
That's going to be very essential for them mm-hmm. to have a space that they can manipulate and call their own.
For sure.
And I would want to provide that. Like, I wouldn't want them to have to share a room with Dave or...
Or anybody.
Or anybody, like yeah. literally having a space that is there and that gives them free reign
yeah.
to do, you know, to do whatever, be as comfortable as they want.
Yeah,
so I feel like that is the only qualification mm-hmm. That I need to make that step.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to, let me open this. I want to talk a bit about what are the qualifications legally that you need to be a foster parent? Like, what do you need to have?
Mm-hmm.
So according to the National Foster Parent Association, the qualifications of a foster parent is to be able to meet the physical, emotional, and developmental developmental needs of a child. And that means you need to be able to provide what they call as 24-hour care and supervision on a daily basis. Not meaning that you need to be with the child 24 hours a day, but like as a parent, you are in charge of that child, responsible for that child, whether they're in school, wherever they are. Mm-hmm. Also, depending on the age of the child, you need to be able to care for yourself financially without the child's stipend. So foster children get a stipend. Mm-hmm. Typically, it's not enough to cover the cost of having that child. It's just there to ease the financial strain that can come with it. You need to be flexible, patient, and understanding. I love this one. You need to have a sense of humor.
Oh, wow. I can't believe they say that.
That's what they said. You need to have a home that's free of fire and safety hazards. Mm. And then you need to, of course, complete a criminal and protective service background.
Yes.
And have the ability to work as a member of a team.
I have a question. Does everyone in your home who is not you need to have a, what did you say? Complete a criminal and protective services background? Check.
I believe so.
Okay, that's good.
If they are living in the home, yes. So aside from, you know, having the home or having the space, and the home does not mean like an actual house. It just means a place in which you dwell that is free of fire and safe other safety hazards. You know, I feel like I hit that on the list, you know, which reading it was like, am I financially stable to take care of myself? Technically,
uh-oh,
yes.
Koo is going to have a foster child by... like come 6 months from now.
You know, I was like, wait a minute. Okay, look at me doing things. But yeah, so that really feels like I do have my own mode of transportation, which helps.
Mm-hmm.
I have the experience in parenting,
yes,
which I feel helps, and have gotten that down packed. You know, definitely would not be thinking about fostering when my son was a lot younger.
Mm-hmm. How does this tie into, first of all, I know that we're talking about this for a podcast, but this is obviously something you've actually considered in real life and not just content for a show.
Mm-hmm.
Have you spoken to Dave about this, and how does this play into his ever growing desire to have a sibling? And then how do you feel about the attachment thing when it comes to him, you know, being attached to a new child? Or human.
It's not something that I've spoken to him about, because once you plant an idea in his head, it's happening tomorrow.
So when are we fostering, mom?
Yeah, like when are we? I'm like, wait a minute. So like until I am like ready and like seriously thinking about it and going through the steps, I will not mention it to him, because I will hear about it from now until forever. I think he would... So his pleas for a sibling, my son literally asks me every day. No, he literally asks for a sibling every single day, at least once a day, every day.
I did not know it was that often.
It is that a day does not go by when he does not say, hey, mom, I want a sibling.
Does he also ask for like a dog, though, every day?
No.
Wow.
The sibling is a lot more frequent than the pet.
Wow.
A lot more frequent. He asked yesterday. Today, we haven't gotten there yet, but I also haven't spoken to him that much
today. There's
a couple
hours left. But
it's literally every single day. I feel like he doesn't understand what it entails to have a sibling. I feel like he really thinks that a person's going to walk out of me or walk into our lives fully fledged and ready to play. And I'm like, no. Like, if I were to have another baby, it would not be your playmate for a good couple of years. Mm-hmm. You know, like... it's not coming out and saying, hey, Dave, let's go play Roblox. Like, it's not happening.
Does he want another playmate, or does he want like a sibling? Like, does he want to like look at the baby and poke the baby's cheeks and be like...
He wants a playmate.
Okay, I see.
And that's what he doesn't understand. He wants a playmate.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that he would enjoy having a sibling if I were to foster. My thing is that I think I would want to foster an adolescent. And I don't know why I want to put this work on myself, because I'm already stressed going through adolescence now.
You like challenges, like, here at Danner Hall Uprising.
I do like a good challenge.
Yeah.
But I definitely would want to foster an adolescent, maybe even someone close to the age that he is now, 11, 12, 13.
Yeah, early adolescence. That's not very far off.
So yeah, I think he would enjoy that. And then I haven't thought about the attachment for him, but also Dave moves on quickly.
Oh no. So he's the one who's like, what was her name again? Who used to live here?
No, literally.
Dora, like, Zora.
You would be his best friend one day, and the next day he's like, all right. We, like, very short attention span. Fair. But that would definitely, you know, making sure that there is no harm or trauma in that kind of separation, mm-hmm. would definitely push me to make sure that we do have some kind of connection, even if it is social through social media or whatever is legal, legally possible, mm-hmm. if, you know, reunification or placement in a different home were to happen.
I have another question for you as someone who is already a parent. So, like, obviously fostering is not easy. Parenting in general is not easy. And I think before you get into this, you need to be someone who acknowledges that they have the wherewithal to deal with challenges that might come with fostering. And one of those challenges may be like behavioral challenges. Like, these are kids who have been through the ringer. They just might like not be about your bullshit. Like, dinner's at 8. I don't give a fuck. Like, I just don't give a fuck. Hanging out with my friends in the park is at 8 or whatever. Getting into any kind of bullshit is at 8. How do you think that you would navigate that kind of energy brought into your home and potentially having an influence on Dave?
So those kind of challenges is what I actually had to help coach other parents through and train other parents through as my work as a therapist. Mm-hmm. And working with families in which my client was the one in the foster care system, was a child, and then their foster parent coming to me with these behavioral issues that were hoped to be addressed in therapy. Mm-hmm. It does take a lot of patience. It does take a lot of boundary setting and sticking to your boundaries, and as well as positive reinforcement and the use of consequences when necessary. Mm-hmm. And the consequences not being like corporal punishment, but it's like...
No Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, like structure. A lot of kids from foster care, depending on their background and their history, have been from home to home, you know, lacking a lot of structure. Mm-hmm. So that is going to be a primary challenge. And I think it goes into what is a part of my answer for the next question. But to answer the latter part of your question, and how do I see that affecting Dave? Well, one, Dave know not to play with me now. So just because Joe came in here don't mean I won't gather you. I could gather you up. Don't play with me. But I would hope that Dave would also set as a reinforcer of our structure and as a role model for this child as well. And I feel like it would allow me to create even further structure with Dave because, you know, kind of what's good for the goose, like, both of you will be following the same set of rules. Mm-hmm. It's not for Joe and then different for Dave. It's like, this is the law of my land here. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what happens. I'm definitely into collaborative parenting and allowing the kids to be a part of the rules that are set, mm-hmm. so they don't feel like it's imposed on them. And hopefully that helps. But it does take a lot of patience because behavioral challenges are a big concern for foster families. There are a big report from foster parents.
Okay. I have faith in you. I do.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you would be very good at this.
The next question was, how do you see yourself building an affirming home?
Okay. I have not intentionally thought about this in the way that I'm sure you did when writing that question, so I'm going to kick it to you first and then fill in the gaps.
Well, we are, of course, already, you know, affirming people. So yeah. That helps. A part of my plan in fostering is that my foster child is enrolled in mental health services and therapy and visual therapy, as well as we go to family therapy. Because there needs to be trust and cohesion built, as well as them working through whatever they have gone through in their lives.
For sure.
So definitely individual, but as well as I'm very strong on the family therapy part and that I can't do it by myself. You know, I'm sure there will be a lot of things triggered for me with this addition of this new child. And I want to be able to work to build a positive family system for them. Mm-hmm. So that is one way. I'm thinking about and wanting an older child and knowing my current struggles with having conversations and sexual education conversations with my own child right now, I'm like, how am I going to navigate that? Especially when when this child can possibly already be sexually active mm-hmm. upon coming in my home. How do I, you know, build that in? I feel like, I don't know why my brain says it feels easier if they're already sexually active.
I was going to say it's easier since they're not your child. Because mm-hmm. it's kind of like, obviously you should be asking your child, but it's like, you know, you've seen your son grow from like literally a fetus to, oh, all of a sudden you're 11. And it's like, prodding with this information is like, mm-hmm. there's still like that uncomfortability there. But with this whole new person who you don't know, I feel very comfortable imagining myself being like, okay, so like, what are your pronouns? Is there anyone special in your life?
Yeah.
How do you identify in terms of orientation? Because it's just like, I don't know you, so
yeah,
let me get to know you, as opposed to I know you, but I kind of don't because you're changing and hormones are happening like that.
Definitely. Yeah, I feel like this is just this child has already been informed mm-hmm. by the world. You know, they're not out of my influence, so it's like I can come in and do corrective work rather than being the one setting the foundation, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's easier for me to do.
Yeah.
So yes, depending on, and then, you know, I don't even know what that means. You know, if this is an 11-year-old, 12-year-old child who is already sexually active, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, I don't know what to do either.
There's the doing part that comes with parenting. You know, some things you just do. You take the information that comes in and we move with it and we go. And we try to stare it into what we think is the right direction. But definitely anyone in my house already, you know, in the way that I raise my child, is able to express themselves in any way that they want, as long as it's respectful to me. So, you know, I'm here to affirm gender expression. I'm here to affirm your sexuality, but also have the rules that I believe are appropriate for whatever age you're at.
Yes.
And trying to curtail that. But definitely, I do feel that therapy will be needed and will be a key part of the fostering experience for me and the child that I foster.
That is like the utter normalization of therapy. And I love that. Like, you a kid, we a family, we doing it regardless. Like, even if you came to my home all smiles, all good and all well, we're still doing it. We still doing it. Yeah. I agree with everything that you're saying. I think that this might be a good time to pull from that resource that I had. Mm-hmm. because they have an intentional list about how you can just make your home more LGBTQ affirming, whether or not the child that you're fostering has even come out to you or let mm-hmm. you know that they are, they identify as LGBT and or Q. So make it clear that slurs or jokes based on gender identity, sexual orientation are not tolerated in your house. Express your disapproval of these types of jokes or slurs when you encounter them in the community or media. Display quote-unquote hate-free zone signs or other symbols indicating an LGBTQ-friendly environment, like a pink triangle, rainbow flag, transgender flag, etc. Use gender-neutral language when asking about relationships. For example, instead of, do you have a girlfriend? Is there anyone special in your life? Celebrate diversity in all forms. Provide access to a variety of books, movies, and materials, including those that positively represent same-sex relationships. Point out LGBTQ celebrities, role models who stand up for the LGBTQ community, and people who demonstrate bravery in the face of social stigma. Let youth in your care know that you are willing to listen and talk about anything. Support your youth self-expression through choices of clothing, jewelry, hairstyle, friends, and or room decoration. Insist that other family members include and respect all youth in your home. Allow youth to participate in activities that interest them, regardless of whether these activities are stereotypically male or female. Educate yourself about LGBTQ history, issues, and resources, and stand up for your youth when he or she, or they, doesn't say that, but they, mm-hmm. is mistreated. Yeah.
Yes, I love that list. One thing I've been trying to do with Dave, I think was that first bullet point of like really pinpointing slurs and other like jokes mm-hmm. that are both homophobic or transphobic or, you know, fatphobic or anything and being like, no.
Yeah.
And this is why no.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had a lot of conversations because he be on the YouTubes and YouTubes be wild. And the TikToks.
Yeah.
And having to like having to see it and having to correct it in real time. You know, it always ends into this conversation. This boy been testing my patience. I'm gonna go on tangent. Boy been testing me, y'all. But we were laying down, we were sitting, and out of the blue he comes and he goes, "Mommy, do girls have penises?" And of course I was like, "Yes, you know, anyone of any gender can have any type of genitalia." We went and I was like, "Remember when we talked about trans women and you know, we talked about how gender and body parts, you know, can come together in these different ways," mm-hmm. and had to like review that conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he just be coming out with these questions. He got a lot of questions. I'm like, you don't need these many questions. Like, you don't need
he's questions. An op, and he's like, he's being fed by an IHU listener, and they're just like, "Yo, how woke is this bitch Akua really? Like, go on and ask your mom this and see how she navigates this real quick." And you're passing the test.
I'm tired. Tired too.
That's very interesting.
Oh my God, Sam.
Yeah.
Here's a question he had, and we'll get back to the last question.
Okay.
This is a question where I knew he was testing me. He said, "Hey, mom, can you pee white pee?"
No. No. This is the "I know more about sex than you think I do" period.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Ooh, Sam. I almost laid out. Oh, Lord have mercy.
And then it's like a mind trip because it's like, then you have to like go through your Rolodex. Like, has he ever asked us about green pea? Has it ever been other colors? Like, or is he really trying to test me? I don't know. Is it innocent or is it not?
Who else? A long and hard conversation about, well, what color is your pee currently? Is there a problem? You know, are you, you know, is there discharge? What's happening? And then kind of going into semen and ejaculation.
Yeah.
I'm stressed.
Yeah.
Please send help.
I feel like that will be interesting conversations to navigate. And I feel like interesting by that, I mean difficult. If you do have a foster child who is more advanced in their sexual knowledge, and then
mm-hmm.
like, is it a separate talk between kids or is it one big talk? Like, Dave is like, "Oh, Jan done told me this. Is it, let me sit Jan and Dave down?"
Mm-hmm.
Or is it, let me sit Jan down? Do you instruct Jan to not tell Dave things that they know? If they are accurate, mm-hmm. like, just don't say misinformation now. Like,
yeah. And I feel like that requires sussing out what Jan knows, but definitely do not want to discourage them having conversations amongst themselves, because that's also how I learned. Though I learned from misinformation, we know that that's how kids learn, when we share what we know with each other, and then trying to be the one implanting proper information.
Yes.
Amongst them both. So we're not being told that you can't swim in the sea when you have your period because sharks will get you, you know?
Exactly. Before we move on to the next question, there's also a bullet point in here in this resource that's more specific. So not just whatever identity your foster child is, having an LGBTQ affirming home, but what to do if the youth in your care actually discloses that they are LGBTQ. Here are some ways that you can show support. When a youth discloses they are LGBTQ, you respond in an affirming, supportive way. I think that's the most obvious.
Yes.
Understand that the way people identify their sexual orientation or gender identity may change over time. So don't be like, "Girl, I thought you said you was non-binary. What the hell?" Like, that's not what you do. Use the name and pronoun that they prefer. If it's unclear, ask what they prefer. Respect your youth's privacy. Allow them to decide when to come out and to whom. Avoid double standards. Allow your LGBTQ youth to discuss feelings of attraction and engage in age-appropriate romantic relationships, just as you would with your heterosexual youth. Welcome your youth's LGBTQ friends or partner at family get-togethers. Connect your youth with LGBTQ organizations, resources, and events. Consider seeking an LGBTQ adult role model for your youth if possible. Reach out for education, resources, and support if you feel the need to deepen your understanding of LGBTQ youth experiences. Yeah, and even like with the connecting your youth to an adult, you know, LGBTQ is not a monolith. That is a broad spectrum. So just because you are gay doesn't mean that you are the most on-point role model for your trans masculine son, foster son. Mm-hmm. So maybe consider, you know, finding a role model who identifies with what they are identifying.
Who aligns with their identities.
Exactly, exactly. So, yeah.
Love that. I love that.
It's a good old resource from 2013, man. I don't know.
And then my last question is, are you open to interracial fostering or even interfaith fostering?
I'm open to it. I'm not close to it. In the same vein, I'm not sure if I would be the best person for... I mean that very seriously. I'm not sure if I would be the best person for all these kind of youth, you know, like, for example, if like the child is bilingual and sometimes they feel more comfortable communicating in their native tongue. I'm not the girl for you. I'm not the girl. Yeah, I'm not the girl for you. And I think that that's doing the child a disservice. Just because I think that I can do it doesn't mean that like I'm actually the best person to do it. Yeah, and I think it creates some boundaries. Like if you are, let's say, a Muslim foster child, like am I hindering you being able to practice your faith in a way that, you know, feels good for you? I don't want to be that person who's preventing those types of things from happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Those are also my concerns, and like how can I meet your needs that are not of my own culture and or religion and or like race, because I know where my ignorance lies.
Yeah,
you know? I can read as much as I can and I can try, but I don't want to be negatively impacting you inadvertently. Definitely open to it. But would have to, you know, kind of suss out those challenges and see if I can, you know, meet your needs in that way.
For sure. So that has been fostering. We hope that you all at home were stimulated by that conversation. And yeah, you got any foster parents out there? Write in. Please. Let us know.
Yes, write in. Yeah. Let us know what your experience has been like.
Yeah. Also, do we have any... queer kids who grew up in the foster care system who had either LGBTQ affirming or non-affirming homes? Also write into us and let us know. Okay, now we're going to get into one of our last segments of the day. This segment is called Sam and Akua Present Ass Media once again this week. This segment is a play on the term mass media, and it is a segment where we review or talk about book, TV, podcast, films, all things media that relate to sex, love, dating, gender, race, family structure. Today's Ask Media will be a quick hit in the same vein of non-traditional family structures. We have two things for you to check out. So a couple of weeks ago, I stumbled upon an article in The Atlantic called The Rise of the Three-Parent Family. That is written by Angela Chen, and the link to it will be in the show notes. The subheading of this article is The Typical Path to Parenthood Didn't Work Out for David J., a founder of the asexual movement. So he designed his own household and is trying to show others what is possible. And just a little sample from the actual article itself. David wanted kids and also wanted a co-parent to help him raise kids, but wasn't wasn't interested in romantic partnership. Before exploring single parenthood, he was curious whether there might be another way to form the family he wanted. David J. now lives with a married couple, Avery Kent and Zeke Housefather, and is not a part of their marriage, but is a father to their biological daughter, Octavia Ortavi, whose full name includes all three of their last names. Jay is Tavi's parent just as fully and permanently as Kent and Housefather, and just as legally too, since three-parent adoption has been recognized by the state of California. And I just think it's a very sweet and loving imagining of what a non-traditional family structure can be. So yeah, definitely check out that article if you get a chance.
Well, shout out to California and this three-parent adoption. Okay.
Very, very free love over there.
And I wanted to talk about 9 Months with Courtney Cox, which is a Facebook Watch show which brings, quote-unquote, which brings a cross-section of Americans to the spotlight as they self-document their diverse experience of pregnancy. So it's a pregnancy docuseries that in season one spotlighted 10 very different families and their journeys. One which I loved was Brandy and Lawrence, which were two gay best friends who decided to have a baby together after their separate relationships failed. And, you know, they still had their desires to be a parent. This decision all went down during a Sunday work shift because they work in the same place. Aww. So imagine being at work.
You want to have a baby? I want to have a baby. It's like that Spider-Man pointing at Spider-Man.
Yeah. But what they said, this is a quote, a direct quote from them, was that we were just airing our grievances as best friends typically do at work. She, Brandy, had just broken up with a girlfriend of hers, and I, Lawrence, was sick and tired of not having a boyfriend. I told her I wanted to start a family, and she felt the same way. Then a coworker who was listening suggested that we just start one together. We looked at each other and were like, okay. And then 3 years later, we ended up with a baby. So through the 9 months series, they documented their struggles and lighthearted moments, including the logistics of at-home insemination, because they weren't attracted to each other. We're trying to get it down.
We're turkey basing this shit only.
Pregnancy-related medical conditions, changes in their lifestyle, and alcoholism. Hmm. They are now currently co-parenting with the discussion of having another child. And Brandy is in a relationship. So there's even discussion of Brandy's girlfriend being impregnated by Lawrence.
How nice.
And doing it all together. And I really, really loved the concept of it. It's a great watch to watch them. Mm-hmm. There are other families in the series. Another one I wanted to highlight was Marnie and Rebecca, who were a lesbian couple with a non-binary partner carrying the baby.
Ah, so they're in a triad?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Can I call them a lesbian couple if one of them is
non-binary? I get it. I see what you mean. There are some people who identify as non-binary lesbians. So on that note, I'm going to say yes.
I felt like it too.
Okay. I just made it more poly. I'm like, oh yes, more there's poly a third than it needed. Person, but there was no third person. The third person is me. Hey guys. Hey Marty.
So yeah, that was season one of the Facebook Watch series. It's very digestible. 15 minutes.
Cool.
Per video. Get into it.
Shout
y'all.
Out to Courtney Cox, man. Shout out to Monica. Okay, cool. If you all read or watch either of those things, let us know. IHUpodcast@gmail.com. We want to hear your thoughts. Last up, we are going to our segment called Fuck You. This is a segment where we read listener letters. If you would like to ask us for some advice, share your hotels, or rant against the white cishet patriarchy, you can send your thoughts to IHUpodcast@gmail.com. Please include your pronouns. And because we are in the future, you can leave us a voicemail. We will play it and respond to it on the show. So drop us a line at 404-491-915. So we're going to wrap today up with a letter that is a response to our episode Choosing to Be a Single Parent that our co-host Rob produced. I think it's a very good coupling to this episode, so I'll put the link to it in the show notes. This letter reads, Hi y'all, I've been listening for a while, but I'm usually late on listening. Chronic illnesses be like, that's no problem, baby. That's no problem. I finally finished up the single parent episode and it moved me so much. Thank you so much for talking about such a sensitive, real topic. I've been planning for a child as a single person and it will be my third parent. pregnancy, but my first child. This episode just moved me and affirmed my choices. Basically, I want to say thank you for being yourselves and making content like this. Pandemically yours, Charlie, which is a fake name. I want to send you love and wish you a healthy, safe, and dignified pregnancy and birthing experience. And then I wanted to go a little bit into some things that we did not consider on that episode, like literally not having a partner there during the birthing process and experiencing that lack or not experiencing that lack during the birthing process. And then also dealing with potential pregnancy loss without a partner to process that with is also something that we did not touch on. But yeah, those are two realities of being a single parent.
And I agree with that. I was like, we didn't touch on that. I didn't think about that, but those are, you know, also things to think about in going in that process. And along with Sam, I'm glad that that episode resonated with you, and definitely sending you love and well wishes on your journey, Charlie.
Yes. Yes. Keep us updated. I'm so happy.
I was going to say, name your baby Ho.
Oh my God. Middle name. Joseph. Because that's like a name. Joseph. Joseph. Yeah.
Horina. Horina.
Oh, yes. Please do that. Please do not do that. But also, please do. Okay. Yeah. All right. Sending you the best, Charlie. If this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher. Let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate every single last one of yous.
Of course. And again, if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at In A Whole Uprising without the G on Twitter, at In A Whole Uprising with the G on Instagram and Facebook. Join our Facebook group by searching In A Whole Uprising Community, that is CUMMUNITY, and head over to inawholeuprising.com to pay a hoe. You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl, and that's on Instagram.
You can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter for cosplay pictures and pictures of weird food. The links to all of those will be in the show notes. Everybody, have a good week because you deserve it. RIP to Alex Trebek, man! Yeah.